Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Veterans Unite podcast. I'm your host, Chad Turner. And tonight we've got a great, we've got a great guest for you. We have got Jennifer Brofer. Not only is she a Marine Corps veteran, but she's also a producer, an actor, and a podcaster as well. But I will let her tell all her story. Right now. So we'll bring her into the show and say, hey, Jennifer, how's it going?
Hi, Chad. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Not a problem. It's my pleasure, believe me. And I appreciate you being on the show with us.
Of course.
So as we were talking before we got on, I was telling you a little bit about me, my service. I was a Navy vet, 94, 98. That's when I served. I was back in Clinton's Navy, so that was tons of fun. But enough about me. Let's talk about you. So what prompted you to go into the Marines?
Well, it's interesting because growing up, I never really had an inclination to join the military, even though both my grandfathers were Army retirees and served in Vietnam, and my uncle retired from the Air Force. I never really had that inclination until I went to Six Flags Over Texas. And I got to go for free with my friends. They had an extra ticket. And then I saw some Marines there doing the chin-up challenge, which, if you're not familiar, it's the challenge where they have you do either chin-ups or a flexed arm hang. If you're a woman, you just hold your chin above the bar for, I don't know, 70 seconds or longer. And if you can do that, then they can give you a free t-shirt. So being the competitive person that I am, I was like, well, I can hold my chin above the bar for a minute. I mean, come on, that's easy. So I did it. I was holding my chin above the bar for like over two and a half minutes. And I dropped from the bar and they were like, whoa, you know, do you want to talk to us about the Marines? I'm like, nah, I'm good. But then I'm like, nah. They're like, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, well, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to be a photographer or a graphic designer. And they were like, oh, well, we actually have a job in the Marines called public affairs. And you could do journalism and photography. And I'm like, I'm listening. So they piqued my interest. And I talked to this public affairs Marine who just happened to be there on site at Six Flags. So I talked to this this Marine, and she and I talked for like 30 minutes or an hour. And by the end of that conversation, I decided I was going to join the Marine Corps.
Damn.
So, yeah, my dad was really supportive. He was like, go get that life experience. My mom was like, oh, you should go to college first. And I said, I will go to college for free on the GI Bill.
There you go.
You're welcome, Mom. That's why I joined the Marine Corps.
That's kind of how I got hook, line, and sinkered into the Navy too. although it wasn't at Six Flags. I wish it was. That would have been a lot more fun. Instead, I got a random call from a recruiter one day. He's like, "Hey, one of your high school friends went signed up, and he's joining the Navy, and he said you might be a good candidate as well." And I'm like, "Really?" I never thought about joining any service, but sure, I've got nothing better to do. Let me listen to what you've got to say. I was out of high school. I was working at a restaurant and really had no direction in my life. So I meet him at a Dairy Queen in Bandera, Texas. And yes, it was the swankiest establishment at the time. So I meet him there. We talk for a little bit. And so I'm like, all right, sure, fine. I'll see what you got. So go down to MEPS, they look at my ASVAB score and they're like, well, you scored well enough on it that we could put you in just about anything you want. What would you like to do? Well, at the time I had a buddy that was interested in airplanes and he was looking at becoming a pilot. And he actually tried to join the Air Force to do that. And then they tried to shank him on his job description. And he's like, nope, screw you guys, I'm out. And now he flies private jets for a living. Doing quite well for himself at that. But anyway, so I go down there, I start telling them this, like, well, you know, we've got this thing called aviation aircraft electrician or no, aviation electronics tech. Okay. I'm like, all right, so what's that? Well, you get to take things apart, you put them back together. Sometimes you can't find the problem unless you're in the plane in the air. So you might get to fly in the planes. And I mean, they had me.
You might get to fly the planes.
Right. I mean, I know I wouldn't fly the plane, but you might get to be in the back seat. So I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Sign me up for that. And little did I know there's not a chance in hell of that ever happening. But hey, I still went in. I got shore duty instead for my whole tour. And wow. But I have no complaints because I got stationed in Guam. And yes, so tropical island, middle of Pacific, 2 years, 11 months. I had no complaints.
Ooh.
But if I had to go to a carrier after that, I would have been hating life. So I was like, you know what? So long. Thanks for all the fish. I'm out.
And, your recruiter actually lied to you then.
Yeah.
My recruiter actually told me the truth. Like, I was a journalist. I was a photographer. So that part actually happened. But, man, at least you weren't scraping barnacles off the hull or something.
That's true. Now, to be fair, I did work electronics. I got to work on missiles. I worked with a bunch of ordnance men. But, I've got no complaints. I loved every minute of what I did. So
that's cool.
Anyways, so you became public, what would you say, public relations?
Public affairs.
Public affairs.
Yes.
So tell me about your time in that.
The official MOS is 4341 combat correspondent, and it's three months to learn the journalism part, the print side, and then it was another 3 months to learn broadcasting. So I got to do both newspaper layout and design. I got to do newspaper articles, print articles. I got to interview people. And then on the broadcast side, I got to do some news reporting on camera. I got to read a teleprompter. I got to do stand-ups. I got to do a lot of video packages. And the most exciting part is when I got to deploy and do that as a public affairs chief with First Marine Logistics Group, which is based out of Camp Pendleton, California. And so we deployed in 2010 to Helmand Province, Regional Command Southwest. And yeah, we got to make Marines famous, essentially. So we interview them, we put them on camera, we take their picture and write stories about them and send them home, send them back to their hometown, or we send it to, you know, news outlets and they'll air the footage, you know, so that they can see what's going on and what the Marines are working on and their missions. And it was really fun. I got to, you know, tell the Marine Corps story.
There you go. Now, do you have like a most memorable story that you told?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, the one that pops to mind is there's nothing really, you know, exciting about it, but it was my first convoy mission. It was my first time ever going outside the wire while deployed. And it was just a resupply, you know, mission from Camp Leatherneck to another FOB, forward operating base. And it was 5 hours. And, you know, it was exciting for me because, you know, okay, so, you know, obviously female Marines have different anatomy. And so in order to prevent myself from having to stop and, you know, use facilities out in the desert, which there weren't any, I basically just had to dehydrate myself for 5 hours so that I wouldn't have to, you know, squat down anywhere whenever they stopped the vehicle. So I don't know if I would call that exciting, but, you know, I had to make sure that the convoy missions were at least 5 hours or shorter because there were some longer ones and, you know, there was like nowhere to hide. There's like, you're out there in the middle of nowhere. And so, and another time I will say, I was on a helicopter going to a FOB to cover a story and I got a little air sick. And so I puked in an ammo can. So yeah.
What was it? At least an empty ammo can.
Yeah. So I had this like look on my face and I was like, you know, and then I looked at the guy next to me. I was like, I need something to like, and he handed me this empty ammo can that I just bleh. I felt so bad because I'd never done that before. Like I never did it after that. But I was with my best friend at the time. We were like traveling together. She was a career planner and I was going to do a story about, you know, the Marine who was re-enlisting. So had a little air sickness on the way there. And that was fun.
Jeez. Now I've never been airsick, but to be fair, I've never been on a helicopter either. Of all the things to do, I've been almost seasick once. And that was actually once I got out of the Navy. My buddy and I decided to take this, there's like a 21-foot boat out into the Gulf of Mexico to go fishing by some oil rigs. While we're moving, I was great. Once we stopped and started throwing the lines in, mm-hmm. and the boat's doing this, I'm like, look at him, like, dude, I don't feel so good. And he's like, all right, enough said. We reeled him in, and he fucking floored it, got us back to shore. And, you know, funny thing is, we get back to shore, we get, we're around where we had to pull the boat out at, around the boat dock area. And I ended up catching like a 50 something inch red. You know, in the Texas, if you're saltwater fishing, you get one tag for like oversized red. Mm-hmm. And that was I was like, oh shit. I mean, I think it took me like 15 minutes to reel the thing in. We finally get it in. It's like, holy crap, dude. So yeah, we had this awesome oversized fish that we should have caught way the hell out there, but instead we caught it like a stone's throw from where the boat ramp was. So go figure.
So it's a good thing that you kind of got seasick a little bit.
Exactly. So you're in the Marines, you do your tours, and at what point do you decide, you know what, I'm done. You know, I just want to pack it up and go do something else.
Yeah. Well, in 2008, I was afforded the opportunity to go to Syracuse University. They have this 2-semester journalism program for active duty journalists like myself. And mm-hmm. so I went there in 2008. I graduated the program in 2009. And that being able to go to college full time while on active duty was really, it was a turning point for me in my career because I fell in love with school. I got to go to the best journalism school, arguably the best journalism school in the country. And I really got that itch to go to film school. So in 2009, like I had just gotten to Camp Pendleton and we were, you know, getting ready to deploy in 2010. And then while I was deployed, I started making preparations for my next step because I knew I had, you know, 2 years left. I was getting out in 2012, like first thing, and I knew I wanted to go to film school. So I started doing research and I looked up, you know, good schools, and I found the University of Texas at Austin. They had a great film program. And because of the Hazelwood exemption or the Hazelwood Act, I got free tuition because I enlisted mm-hmm. from Texas. So I got to essentially get free tuition and pocket the GI Bill so that I could live off of that while I was going to school for 2 years. And so I got out in 2012. And, you know, at that point, it was 10 years. It was either, you know, stay in 20 and retire or like, you know, it's time to get out. It was not like necessarily an easy decision because, you know, I had learned so much in the Marine Corps, but at the same time, I was ready for the next chapter because, you know, I didn't want to be a journalist anymore. I wanted to go into film and I wanted to be a producer. And actually, when I was deployed, I do a lot of producing, and I didn't even know at the time that it was producing is what I was doing, because I got mm-hmm. to write my own scripts. I got to essentially coordinate entire productions. I got to edit those productions on my own. And I didn't know that was basically film producing. So they gave me really good tools and a good foundation for when I was ready to get out and go to film school full time. And when that finally did happen in 2012, January, when I was honorably discharged after just 10 years, I finally got to go to school to continue and finish my degree, essentially, because all those credits I got from Syracuse University transferred over. And my mom was finally happy that I was finally going to college full time. Right. So my mom was very happy. And yeah, being a Marine veteran really helped me as a student, because when I was 18, I didn't really take it seriously. You know, I think I got a D in history, you know, like I was terrible. Right. But when I went back, you know, I got pretty much all A's and B's, you know, I was on the dean's list. So it was really a good experience for me having that Marine Corps foundation.
There you go. So then that kind of brings us towards where we're heading now. But one of the things I want to ask you about, and so you get out in 2012, and then at what point did you actually start getting in front of a camera and behind a camera?
So that's a good question, because when I very first got out of the Marine Corps, I did freelance for a little bit at this local news station, believe it or not. This local affiliate was nice enough to give me like a part-time job. And so I got to do behind the scenes, behind the camera work, covering like high school football games. I literally knew nothing about football, but they put a camera in my hand and said, you know, and said, shoot the football game. And so I did that for a few weeks. I did another story where I covered like the Trail of Light ceremony, where the mayor was made an appearance, and they said, get some footage of, you know, get on that carriage over there. So I ran to get on the carriage where the mayor was, and I didn't realize that it was the mayor's carriage. And so I got to sit across from the mayor of Austin and, you know, basically film him on this horse carriage going down this trail of lights. And I don't think I would have had like the balls to do that had I not been a Marine. Like, hey, can I get on your carriage? He's like, yeah, sure. And I was like, oh, you're actually the mayor. But yeah, I don't even remember what the question was, honestly. What was the question?
at what point did you start getting behind and in front of the camera?
Okay, so I graduated from film school, UT Austin, mm-hmm. in 2014, and then I moved to Los Angeles. And this is really where my on-camera experience comes into play, because although I didn't do on-camera work at first, I worked for a top agency. I was an agent's assistant for a year, and I learned all about the business. So if you've ever seen like Entourage and you see, you know, Ari Gold's character, it's like that at the agency, you know, getting yelled at, like, do this, print that email, and, you know, scheduling and phone calls. So I did that for a year.
Get blamed for everything that doesn't go right.
And it's interesting because I was in my 30s at the time, and, you know, most of the assistants were like, you know, fresh out of college, 22. And here I was like, hey, if I could survive Afghanistan, I think I can survive an agency in right. Hollywood. So I worked there for a year and learned a lot about the business. And then I went to work for a production company, a small production company, and I was there for almost a year. And I decided when I was at that production company that I really wanted to pursue acting, because I had done acting as a little girl. I did it in grade school, all throughout high school. And then, of course, you know, in the Marines, there are no actors. So, you know, I decided, hey, why not use the rest of my GI Bill to go to acting school? Because I'd only used 2 years of my GI Bill for my film degree. So I found this really great program, this 2-year acting conservatory called the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. So I got to go there for free on the GI Bill for 2 years. And that's where I learned all about acting. And it's, you know, classically trained. They teach you theater, Shakespeare, camera work, you know, all of it. And it was a lot of fun. And so really my on-camera work started, you know, around 2017. And I've been freelancing pretty much ever since. So it's been a wild ride.
Okay. So when did you get hooked up with, what's the group? We Are the Mighty?
Yes. So I first met them around 2017. And We Are the Mighty asked if I would be one of their on-camera talent so that I could read, do some today in military history segments for them. And, you know, being a new on-camera personality, I decided, sure, like, why not give it a try? And so I did that for a few months. I did several segments for them for Today in Military History. And I did some other things for them. They had like dumb military questions where people would write in questions that we would read on camera, and they were just ridiculous questions, you know? So that was a lot of fun. And I love those guys at We Are the Mighty. Guys and gals, they're great. And I have a, you know, I have them to thank actually for a really cool opportunity that I got recently that starts next month. It's a long-term gig on a really big show. So thank you to We Are the Mighty.
Awesome. So in addition to doing that, what do you find, what did you find more challenging, doing their segments or while you're in the Marines doing the little news segments that I guess you did for, I don't know what you called the news agency.
Oh yeah. So in the Marines, it was Marines TV, and those aired weekly on the Pentagon Channel. I would say those were more difficult because I had to wear my dress out, my alpha uniform. And, you know, I mean, it just, it's, you know, I don't get to wear like nice, comfortable clothes. And, you know, you have to, I was not as comfortable with myself on camera. So I was a lot more stiff. And now I'm like, you know, you just read it like you're talking to a friend, you know, you don't have to be like today in Marine Corps history. So, yeah, I would say that that was good training for the work that I do now. And, but it was definitely a little more challenging being on active duty doing that.
Gotcha. Plus, you know, everyone watching you is scrutinizing every single word you said. Right.
Yes. I know. Well, when I was in the Marines, I mean, there would be people behind the glass in the studio. And if I flubbed a word, I'd have to do it all over again. And of course, I mean, the same is true for the, you know, the Today in Military History segments, but there are fewer people in the room. And the way they direct is just very calming and, you know, just like, let's just do it again. Like you're talking to a friend, you know? So there was less pressure and I just felt more at ease. But yeah, I mean, both were, you know, challenging in their own way, but yeah.
Gotcha. So now what do you find more rewarding, being the actor in front of the camera or being the producer in the background?
It's a good question. I will say producing is probably my first love just because I've been doing it. I mean, I wouldn't say I've been doing it longer. I was acting when I was a kid, but there's just something so rewarding about bringing the entire team together, because as a producer, you take the entire project from, you know, fruition to inception, and for inception to the end where it's on screen or on TV. And as an actor, you know, you get a script and you have to do a lot of work to prepare that character, whatever the role is, and you show up and you do it and then you leave. But like the producer really is a challenging job because you have to find the script, you have to find the idea, you have to develop it, you have to find all the cast and crew members. So it's a whole other beast. But I mean, they're both rewarding. I would say producing is probably more challenging overall, just for those reasons I mentioned, but they're both very rewarding in different ways.
Gotcha. Now, I was snooping on your website, jenniferbroford.net. Yes. And if anyone wants to see some of the things that she's done, you can go to that website. And she's got everything from her biography videos. I don't know how you... I guess your acting resume.
Yes.
But then the video section, you can actually see a lot of the things that she's worked on. And that's actually how I found out about the We Are the Mighty. I sat here this morning at like 6 o'clock in the morning. I just went through every video you had on the page.
Wow. And
so, I mean, I got quite good at knowing, you know, if you want to know what happened in history yesterday, please click here. I saw all of that.
So you're like basically a historian now. You know everything about military history.
If only I could remember shit, then I'd be fine.
It's same. I read the teleprompter. I'm like a goldfish. It goes right out.
Yep.
I don't remember it, but.
So, let's see. So yeah, so you've got all these videos up there, and one of them that I was kind of interested in was that I'm gonna have to pull it up in front of me, or else because I'm not gonna remember the name. But it was the one that you did about the lady that had the brain cancer. Do you remember that story?
Yes. That was a short that I did in 2013 called Victory Birds. And yes. I met this young cancer patient named Brooke Wheeler, and she had a brain tumor. And I initially started doing it as part of an assignment for a documentary class at University of Texas at Austin. So I followed Brooke Wheeler as she went through her radiation treatment. And, you know, when she shaved her head because her hair was falling out, and we had so much footage and it could have been so much longer, but we had to keep it to 10 minutes for the class project. Mm-hmm. So we did this short film, and, you know, I love that film because, you know, I never knew anything about brain tumors or, you know, astrocytoma carcinomas or astrocytoma, whatever brain tumor that she had. I never knew anything about that until I met her. And, you know, it's a worthwhile cause to look into. The Brain Power 5K is a cause that supports brain cancer survivors and brain cancer patients. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was probably one of my favorite documentaries that I've ever done.
Okay, well, very good. As I was listening to that story, I mean, you can't help but feel the emotions, especially when the mom starts talking. And talking about how, you know, her daughter would lay her head in her lap and she'd stroke her hair that was falling out from the chemo.
Yeah.
And she's just like, you want to run your hands through my hair one more time before we shave it off? Yeah. You know, and the feeling and the emotions in the mom. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm a guy, but I would get choked up a little bit on that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn, because as you may or may not be able to hear in the audio, I do have my own daughter who's now almost 9 months old.
Wow.
And, you know, my wife and I, we've been married 18 years and we finally had our first child.
Wow.
And yes. And so I'm 46 right now.
Well,
I'm
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm going to be 60 something by the time she gets out of high school.
Nice.
And we're still wanting to have one more at some point.
Maybe you can wait till you're 60. You'll have a babysitter, you know.
There you go. But you know, hearing her story, you know, makes me think about my daughter. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, thank God that she so far everything is healthy and normal, you know, because I mean, I see the things that those families go through, and God, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
But
and I caught up with Brooke recently. She's still kicking. Mm-hmm. Recently her tumor, it did come back, or it did start, you know, growing again. So she's actually going through another round of treatment.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we're going on now 7 years of her having this tumor. And so I'm just like, you know, if you're a praying person, send prayers to Brooke Wheeler and the Victory Birds, because, you know, we're all brain cancer patients.
Yeah.
Because that is a rough thing to go through. But she's a very strong, strong person. So if anyone can beat it, it's Brooke.
There you go. Now, to go into something a little more positive, if you want to call it positive, The Passage.
Ah, yes.
That is an interesting story. I'll let you tell us about it. Why did that become why did that become?
Yeah, it became because when I first moved to Los Angeles in 2014, one of my mentors told me about this contest. It was a film mm-hmm. contest called the 51-hour, you know, short film competition, the Make Your Mark competition. Mm-hmm. And it was sanctioned by the Producers Guild of America.
Okay.
And so I really, having just moved to LA, I wanted to hit the ground running. I wanted to do this contest. So I met with a bunch of veterans who work in the entertainment industry through a group that I found called Veterans in Film and Television. It's now called Veterans in Media and Entertainment, or VME. And I met a bunch of veterans. They signed up to help me and be on the crew. And so we shot and edited an entire short film in 51 hours.
Wow.
Yes. And it ended up, out of 500 entries, it was selected top 10.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you. And so it's interesting because those, if you've ever done one of those short film competitions before, they give you the, you know, the topic, like what's the film going to be about. They tell you it has to include a certain prop. Sometimes they have to include a line of dialogue. It depends on the contest. So ours had to be military themed, which, yay, hello,
all right,
military producer and military crew members. And it had to have a stick of chewing gum, which was a really weird thing to add into, you know, a short film, but we managed to fit it in there somehow. And so the only thing we had were, we had our crew members, and I knew, like, I had some actors on hand, but other than that, like, we didn't know what the story was going to be. And so we had to come up with something.
Right.
And my director was an Army veteran. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, a lot of my crew members were veterans from that group. And so, yeah, it was, we turned it into this epic post-apocalyptic love story about a Marine who is searching for his lost love during an apocalypse.
Right.
And it was turned out to be really great. And I'm really happy with how that turned out, especially given that it was like my first short film having moved to LA.
No, it was really good. And so the part that I was trying to wrap my head around at the very end, though, is you see him show up when he's young, but then you see him show up again as when he's old. So,
yeah.
I'm guessing that means that in his dreams he showed up young, but in reality he showed up old, or how?
Well, that was a director choice.
Okay.
I guess he took that long to find her that he was old by the time he found her.
Right. But hey, he made it. That was the important part.
They were both old, but hey, he was reunited with his lost love. And yeah, so I had to find four actors, you know, that looked like each other, kind of.
Right.
So,
all right. Well, I love the story. I thought it was great. Very well put together, by the way.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And so now that brings us into your podcast.
Yes.
You've got what, 12 episodes? No.
We have five episodes. Well, we're going to have five as of tomorrow, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But we'll, yeah, so when this airs, we'll have had five episodes.
Okay.
I just started it a month ago, and I was honestly, I'd never, kind of like when I joined the Marine Corps, never had any inclination ever to host a podcast, ever.
Right, right.
And I was sitting at home one day, my boyfriend was out of town for a wedding, and my one of my best friends was sick, and so she couldn't hang out, and I had nothing to do. And I was like, what can I do? I guess I'll make a podcast. And I didn't know like what I would make a podcast about because there's so many podcasts out there. Like, what the hell would I even talk about? And then I thought, wait, I happen to have a lot of friends who are veterans, who are actors, artists, photographers, rappers, musicians. I'll do something about creative veterans. And there so that's how I came up with the podcast. It's a weekly podcast, and I interview veterans who work in all kinds of creative fields. And I'm actually doing another interview. That's why I have to leave at 3:30, which is, we have plenty of time, but
yeah.
I'm interviewing another veteran today, and that's going to be for episode 6.
Awesome.
So, yeah. Thank you. It's pretty exciting. And I actually have another podcast that I just started with my two best girlfriends, and it's called Dick Talk and Mimosas.
Oh, wow.
It's
wow,
gonna be,
that should be a good one right there.
We're dropping our first episode tomorrow. And if you would like to check us out on Instagram, we are at DikTok_N_mimosas. And it is explicit, not for kids. This is not, you know, the podcast for, you know, nuns or priests or anything. So,
gotcha. I just found it on Instagram. I'm going to start following it because that just sounds hilarious.
It's a good time. We talk about everything from fetishes to felines over mimosas.
Well, all righty then. There you go.
Check it out.
I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Like I said, I listened to all your episodes so far, and I now understand why I asked you about 12, because there's another show that I've been listening to, but this guy does like kind of long formish shows, which drive me nuts. But anyways, but on one of the episodes of your show, someone had mentioned to you, because you're a Marine, so there's always that CRAN concept.
Yes.
Did he ever send you the CRANs ready to eat?
He didn't, because I need to buy them. I need to buy them and try them because they sound delicious. Crayons ready to eat. And I thank you for reminding me because I totally forgot. And I do want to try them. So
my understanding is it's basically colored chocolate.
Yeah. So
brilliant concept.
Yeah.
I remember I actually found that guy a few years ago, and in the beginning, he was having issues with the state of California and the way they're allowed to package edible products. Mm-hmm. And something about he can go through an easy process and only be able to sell it out of the house to mm-hmm. people that come up to the door kind of thing. Or if he wants to sell it online, he's got to go through like 20 million hoops to be able to do that. So, yeah.
Boring.
Go figure. But is a real product that's out there. So anyone interested in eating crayons.
Where are my Marines at?
Exactly. All right. So if you're a veteran and you're wanting to get into the acting space, what do they need to know?
Obviously, you'd need to do some training, get into a class or find a conservatory, whatever you can do to, learn the basics of acting, whether it's theater, on camera, whatever it is you want to do. And then, of course, you got to get headshots and a demo reel because you have to be able to market yourself to casting directors and producers. And then, honestly, networking is a huge part of it. I've gotten a lot of my opportunities through networking. So through veterans groups like Veterans in Media and Entertainment, VMEconnect.org, that is one of the best groups that I've joined. It's all veterans working in all areas of entertainment. So whether you're an actor, producer, director, gamer, artist, whatever it is, you can be in VME. And so that's a great group. And then just start meeting people, start networking. I worked on a project recently with a veteran who I met through VME. And a couple months later, he asked me to be in this comedy sketch that he wrote that's going to be coming out in a couple weeks. So I'm really excited to drop that. But yeah, networking is a huge, huge part of it. So as many groups as you can get into, whether it's Facebook or, right now you can't really do in-person groups as much, but, virtual groups, just meet everyone and constantly be honing your craft. Right. So whether it's virtual classes and then just creating your own content is a huge part of it too. So if you want to be an actor, write a script for yourself and get your friends to make it with you, film a monologue, work on learning how to edit your own demo reel or, things like that. Create your own opportunities because waiting around for things to just happen to you, mm-hmm. you're going to grow old waiting for opportunities to come your way. So create your own opportunities.
Yep. So as we start winding things down today, I do want to make sure that we get all your social media info out there. So if someone wanted to find you, follow you, where would they go?
You can follow me on Instagram at Jennifer Brofer. It's JennifeBrofer. I'm also on Facebook at Jennifer Brofer Acting. And my website is jenniferbrofer.net. And I'm on Twitter at Jennifer Brofer, but Twitter.
I know. I am right there with you. I had a Twitter account years ago and I was like, man, this shit's stupid.
I have it, but I don't like using it. I just have it so no one like steals my name or whatever.
There you go. There you go. And there is one question that I like to ask people at the end, and it's one of these days I'll learn to talk too. What question have I not asked you yet, but should have?
Ooh. You can ask me about my cats.
That's right. You do have your own Instagram page for the cats, don't you?
I do. I have two cats, Wally and Louie, at Wally and Louie on Instagram. And I mean, they're actually at the cat sitter right now. My friend asked for a visit, so he has them for a week. But I love them. They're Scottish Folds. And if you're a cat lover and you like me, then also we do talk about cats on Dick Talk and Mimosas, my other podcast. So check it out. But yeah, that's about it. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Not a problem. And, okay, there's one more thing I got to ask.
Okay.
And I told, in a sense, I told myself I wouldn't because the topic I don't really care for, but it came up, I believe, in two of your episodes.
Okay.
And it was something along the lines of your boyfriend can twerk better than you.
Yes, my boyfriend. Yes, my boyfriend Ahmed. He is a much better twerker, and he tried to give me a lesson in my living room, and it was laughable because he was like expertly moving his booty, and I can't shake my booty to save my life.
Oh,
and
God.
So it's hilarious because, you know, that should be something that I can do, right? But I can't. Like, I can't do the WAP video. Like, I can't. I can't do a TikTok video where I'm shaking my butt because I just can't move my butt that way. So, but he can. And so I'm going to leave the twerking to my boyfriend and he's very good at it. I'll put a little dollar in his G string. So
didn't want to know that. Didn't want to know that. But thank you very much for coming on the show. It has been a blast. I appreciate that. So folks, don't forget, you know, check out Jennifer, go to jenniferbrofer.net, check her out on Instagram, find her on Facebook. And don't forget about, you know, what was it? Dick Talk with Mimosas.
Dick Talk and Mimosas.
In Mimosas. So check that out when it comes out. We are going to end up this show today with a song by a veteran musician named Jen Ford. Ooh. So if I can get everything to work with me properly, I have to share my screen here because this is an old computer. It does not like me.
Come pick me up, let's get some fireball. Baby, get your boots on, time to get your scoot on down at the dance hall. Wanna party all night, line dance, don't fight it. Hell yeah, I'm trying to my song. Baby, get your boots on. Get your boots on. Call our friends to meet us, cause they all know where to go. Tonight we'll be truck and come pick me up, let's get some- come pick me up. Let's get some fireball. Baby, get your boots on. Time to get your scoot on down at the dance hall. Wanna party all night long? Dance so fun and hell yeah, turn on my song. Wanna party all night?
Great.
I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
I know, right? You're most welcome. Have a good one. And folks, I'll see y'all next time.